Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is October the 25th, 2021. And we want to remember this date because today is the beginning of an actual organized series of podcast videos, whatever, that I'm going to be doing with Jimmy Sexton of the Esquire Group, who's actually, I think, more or less based in Dubai. But we'll get back to that later. And where this comes from is last podcast that we did and a few other ones, I'm talking about a book by Charles Adams called Good and Evil, The Impact of Taxes on Civilization. Now, Charles Adams was a tax lawyer. I say was because he apparently died in 2013, I think. And obviously a brilliant tax lawyer, but he was also a historian. And my God, when you combine tax with history, there's the potential to explain, as he has done in this brilliant book, so much of the history of civilization in terms of taxation. And we are living in a completely tax-obsessed world in 2021, as I've said repeatedly, and Jimmy would, I'm sure, agree with me. But the single most interesting thing about a person today is not the kind of car he drives, not his vacation, not his occupation, not his family, not where he went to school, but yes, you guessed it, his tax residency. Because, you know, this determines so much. So what we've decided to do, and our goal is to invite other people into the discussions, actually use Charles Adams' book, Good and Evil, Tax and Civilization, as the basis for a series of podcasts. I mean, you can see it as a one semester course in tax history with based on Charles Adams, with John Richardson and Jimmy Sexton providing some commentary and discussion. So also I strongly recommend that you follow us on this, which we hope to be once a week for the foreseeable future. But I think it would be really, really helpful if you were to invest the whatever it is, $20 or whatever, to get a copy of this book and read along with us. Because I tell you, once you've read this book, you will never see the world of taxation the same again. All right. So, Jimmy, are you basically in agreement with what I've said so far? And what do you want to add here to this project?
I'm in complete agreement. I think that this is a really timely matter to be discussing this, because as you said, this is a tax-obsessed world. It's all we read about in the news almost, this and COVID. And I think that Charles Adams has some very insightful observations and makes a few very good points that people should be mindful of. And I'm really excited to be doing this series with you. I think it's going to be really good and a lot of fun, and hopefully learn a lot along the way.
Oh, absolutely, especially the fun. You know, you talk about tax and COVID, and I got to tell you that last March, April, when the whole thing started, I immediately started seeing in all these tax publications, people talking about, oh my God, it's not COVID that's important, it's the effect of COVID on tax residency.
Yeah.
I was just shocked by this. I was shocked by it. I mean, you know, only accountants and lawyers could possibly see the COVID pandemic in terms of a tax issue, right?
No, I mean, it was a panic. Permanent establishments everywhere.
That's right, exactly. What if somebody can't leave? Have they triggered the substantial presence test? Oh my God.
Yep, exactly.
Imagine for all those people, all of a sudden U.S. tax residents under substantial presence test with foreign assets.
Well, I mean, it wasn't just the impact on the United States, right? I mean, you also have the impact of, I mean, think of all the people, for example, that live in border towns, right? So, I mean, you had a whole bunch of people, like, for example, that live in Austria, but work in like Liechtenstein, Switzerland, and Germany and commute over the border. Now, all of a sudden, where they normally were providing these services in countries other than where they reside, they were residing it from home, which is essentially an office of that company in Austria now where they're working, which could create a permanent establishment for that business in Austria and subject it to taxes there.
Oh my God.
It's happening all over the world.
Oh, I mean, absolutely amazing stuff. And then, you know, in the United States, you know, I thought was really, really interesting. As you know, Massachusetts and New Hampshire are beside each other. And New Hampshire, of course, doesn't have a state income tax, and Massachusetts has one on steroids, as you know. And what was happening was that all kinds of people who would drive to work in Massachusetts were staying home in New Hampshire, but Massachusetts still wanted to tax them, you know, as though they were, you know, on the premise that really they were still in Massachusetts. And New Hampshire sued Massachusetts. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court wouldn't hear the case. But I mean, that's just another interesting example of how this whole COVID thing has just, you know, triggered, you know, tax residency discussion everywhere. But anyway, let's begin, I think, by introducing Charles W. Adams a little bit. Okay, I'm actually just reading off the back cover. So Charles W. Adams received a degree in history and philosophy from Whittier College. Isn't that where President Nixon?
I believe so.
President Nixon School? From Whittier, and a Doctor of Law degree from UCLA. After a decade of private practice, he entered the field of international taxation and became a certified specialist in taxation law. Known to many taxmen as the tax writer, he lived abroad for many years. Sounds ominous, doesn't it? Lecturing and publishing scores of historical and contemporary articles on taxation. Now get this, he resides in Toronto, Canada. This guy was actually teaching some courses in U of T in the 90s. I mean, I graduated by then, but I feel that, you know, it's really, really enhanced my feelings about University of Toronto since, you know, since he taught there. But anyway, an amazing book. And I'm going to include, and as a link to this, our first thing, so an interview with him, which is interesting. But why don't we start with the introduction? And I'm going to read a paragraph, and I think we can maybe use this as the first thing we talk about to kind of trigger the series here. But here we go. This is Charles W. Adams. Taxes are a powerful mover of people, more than governments either care to admit or realize. Angry taxpayers can be a lethal threat to a government that institutes oppressive taxation. Taxpayers instinctively rebel. The first warning phase of rebellion is rampant tax evasion and flight to avoid tax. The second phase produces riots. The third phase is violence. Life ultimately can be catastrophic for any government that pushes its taxpayers too far. When the first phase occurs, governments respond by cracking down on defiant taxpayers. In times past, as the British jurist Blackstone observed, the executioner was brought in along with instruments of torture. In modern times, taxpayers like to manufacture synthetic felonies to terrorize taxpayers. Well, that's more than enough to get us started today, I think.
Absolutely.
Well, the hardest problem is where to begin with this. Why don't we start with maybe the first sentence, the first phase. Taxpayers, let's see, the first warning phase of rebellion is rampant tax evasion and flight to avoid tax. Let's talk about the flight to avoid tax.
Well, you know, I think we're there.
I think we might be. I mean, you know, was it you who was telling me? I mean, I never would have believed this was possible. But was it you who was telling me last week that people are actually renouncing U.S. citizenship?
Oh, yeah. It's skyrocketing.
You're kidding.
No, but I mean, look, it's not only U.S. people. The U.S. is a little bit unique in that, you know, when you give up your citizenship, there's an exit tax. Most countries levy an exit tax just when you change residency, right? Countries that have exit taxes, like Germany, for example. But once you're out, then you're not liable for any tax in Germany unless there's German source income. So what I'm seeing now is not just Americans renouncing citizenship, but a mass exodus of wealthy from high tax countries, which they've actually been okay living in until this point, because they know what's coming because of COVID. They know the government printed so much money. that it's going to skyrocket. And they look at it as, I'd rather pay the exit tax now and live tax-free in the future because I might not be able to get out later.
That, you know, that is absolutely right. And again, leaving, we don't want to pick too much on the U.S., but I've got to tell you that I know personally, and I wouldn't call these people really wealthy, but, you know, people in their 40s, late 30s, maybe early 50s in Canada who would prefer to pay the departure tax now, and they're moving to all kinds of different places.
For sure.
So this is a serious issue.
You know, I mean, as you very well know, you can become an American citizen even if you're born abroad, if one of your parents is American and meets certain requirements. And I was talking, this is a few years ago, and I was talking to this lady. I mean, this is the sad part. I was talking to this lady whose kid was born outside of the United States. And I forget if it was her or her husband that was the American. But she thought the kid was safe from being American. And when I told her, no, the kid's American, she started to cry. She said, oh my God, what have I done? I mean, she was hysterical. And even more hysterical when I told her there was nothing she could do about it until the kid turned 18 and could expatriate. So, I mean, it's gotten pretty bad.
Oh, it has gotten really bad. I mean, on that particular point, a couple of weeks ago, I was contacted by somebody who, was a U.S. born person living in Canada with three kids who was just going out of her mind, horrified at the thought that her children might be American citizens.
Yeah.
And, I felt so great after I did a consultation with her because she hadn't lived long enough in the United States to pass on. So she was so happy. I mean, once I confirmed to her those kids were not American, I have never experienced such feelings of love for me. I think in my whole life, I mean, you know, actually felt appreciated. And I mean, this whole tax residency thing is an absolutely terrifying thing.
Well, and I mean, look, tax, I mean, literally, so, you know, whenever I open up a news app on my iPad, the two most common topics I see are COVID and something to do with taxes. I mean, taxes are not supposed to be this present in our lives. I mean, every decision that you make, if you want to survive financially, you have to think about the tax consequences. There's no way an ordinary person can do that. And so it's not, and the taxes have gotten so oppressive in so much of the world that, as you read here, avoidance and evasion have become rampant.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I don't have any particular comments on the evasion thing because living in Canada is pretty, you know, it's such an efficient tax system that's pretty tough to do. But, and also people who are evading taxes, you know, Jimmy, don't consult, you know, lawyers and accountants.
No,
you know, they just do it.
And the other thing I would argue is, you know, the people that are evading taxes, they deserve to get caught because, you know, if with proper tax strategies, you can usually come out with very advantageous tax benefits without doing anything illegal. But the problem is, and this is something that you see the government's doing a lot, is trying to confuse the issue and lumping evasion and avoidance together as if they're the same thing when you read newspaper articles and stuff like that, which is absolutely not the case.
Or if you watch the U.S. Senate Finance Committee hearings on the stuff that started in March, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was just a discussion of how, the rich are somehow evil. I mean, yeah. You know, hey, the rich got rich under the existing tax system. You don't like it, you know, create a different tax system, but don't vilify people for, you know, fundamentally obeying the law.
Well, and the other thing that I was reading about was, the step up basis in estate taxes, right? And they were calling it a loophole. And I was thinking to myself, a loophole is an unintended consequence of a law. The step up basis was an intentionally written law, and it does exactly what it's intended to do, which by definition is not a loophole.
I think that's right. But, you know, all of these are instances of how, you know, politics is, it's completely dominated by tax. I mean, if you look at, you know, what's going on in Washington today, you know, I hate to keep, you know, going to the United States, this, in Canada, any one of these countries, right? I mean, all this is just discussion about, you know, sort of redistribution of wealth and that. And there's no question the COVID thing is going to be, it's going to be a big, big factor here. But, you know, on the issue of the flight, right, the flight to avoid tax, I mean, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I think that Canada may have had the world's first departure tax. That's horrible. And it's, you know, it's begun to, the spread has become accelerated because more and more countries are instituting these kinds of taxes. And what's interesting is that because the United States, right, so the way these departure taxes work in a very, very general sense, in a very general sense, is that you have to pay a tax on your pretend gain on the increase in the value of your asset at the time you're a tax resident of a country. So they don't get, you know, they don't lose the gain. I mean, the most simple example is that in the world of international tax, capital gains, for example, are sourced to the place where the person lives. So let's say, let's say a person lives in country A and, you know, invests in stocks, $100,000, and they're worth $10 million. And if the person were to leave country A and move to country B, where he's a tax resident of country B, then those gains would be sourced to country B and country A would lose out. You know, and that's the basic rationale for these exit taxes. But what's interesting is that because only the United States has citizenship-based taxation, U.S. citizens will leave the United States, build up assets outside the United States, and their exit tax is not based on the accrual of value at a time when they lived in the United States. It's based on an accrual of value when they lived outside the United States as a U.S. citizen. So that makes it, you know, actually a very, very different, a very different kind of tax, I think. Anyway, you know, clearly, although people, tax is too difficult to understand, of course, but even a dog knows whether he's been tripped over or kicked, right? And I think that people all around the world are beginning to understand that they are being kicked, and they are being kicked really, really hard. For example, this recent $600 bank account reporting thing in the United States, I mean, do you see any way to imagine that somehow aimed at billionaires?
No, I mean, look, the billionaires' transactions, I mean, first of all, this whole thing is about massive tax evasion in the top 1%. Listen, the top 1% hire guys like me to figure out how they can do it legally and not get in trouble. So they're not reporting income, right? The transactions that they're doing are too big that they cannot not do them through bank accounts. And they're not stupid enough to just wire millions of dollars in and out of bank accounts without reporting it. And so, you know, the real tax evasion is small business that don't report cash that they take in, that barters with other people. But, you know, you can't pick on small business and get elected. The only people you can pick on and get elected are the wealthy people because they're such a small percentage of the population.
Do you think that the wealthy are was it Justice Stone and Carolyn Products? Do you think the wealthy are now a discrete and insular minority who need to be protected?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, look, I think I think that they need to be a protected class. I mean, some of this speech that you hear about them should be protected from the hate speech. It's horrible.
Well, it certainly is a problem. I mean, fortunately, I don't know about you, but I'm not rich, so I don't have to worry about this. It would be hard to be a wealthy person today in the world. I mean, you know, not only do you need physical security, but you need tax security.
You need tax security, and it's a moving target, and there's not so many places left to go. There's a reason I live in Dubai. Other than the fact that it's a great city, I do really enjoy the no income tax thing.
Really?
I'm not complaining about it.
Who could have known? Yeah. All right, let's focus again, you know, this text here. So I, you know, it's funny. I don't know that there's tax evasion. actually. I mean, I think what we have is a tax system that's so dysfunctional that there are really five or six different tax systems, right? There's one for Americans abroad. There's ones for people who make income from employment. There's ones for people who make income from investments. You know, there's the super wealthy who don't have income and, you know, et cetera, right?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm gonna have a little bit of a different view on that. I do think that there is some tax evasion. I think there's a lot less now than there was years ago. But I'll tell you, I still get phone calls from people now and then saying, you know, oh, can't they set up a BVI company and then charge my company over here, you know, for services, and then like get a credit card to my BVI company. I mean, these are really old school tax evasion tactics, which obviously I don't assist them with. But there's definitely some people out there trying to evade taxes. But I think that is a tiny, tiny minority compared to people who are legally avoiding.
There's actually no question about that. No question about it. I even think that the government, if you look at the Senate Finance Committee, I didn't even think they talk that much about tax evasion. I mean, no, I think they just talk about, you know, sort of a system that has facilitated all this stuff. But, you know, it says here when the first phase occurs, right, which is the first phase, meaning the rebellion, the flight to avoid tax, it says governments respond by cracking down on defiant tax. Well, who's that? What is a defiant taxpayer? Somebody who says, I've had enough, I want to renounce?
I mean, I think it's anybody that doesn't want to maximize for taxes, right? I think a defiant taxpayer is anybody who wants to try to reduce their taxes, which is really interesting because I forget the quote, but there's an old Supreme Court case that basically says no person has to arrange their affairs to pay more than the minimum amount of tax necessary, right? I mean, and now they're trying to say that anybody that does that is somehow...
Well, that would be the view of the Senate Democrats, I think, for sure.
Of course.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. So go on and say, you know, I think that cracking down is, what does cracking down mean? Well, you know, this $600 thing, I think, is certainly cracking down, isn't it? But cracking down on...
I mean, I personally think the $600 thing is an illusion of cracking down, because this all the $600 thing is going to do is create a bunch of paperwork that's going to discover that the vast majority of people are tax compliant and they're not going to catch anything with this.
By the way, they've apparently raised that to 10,000. Do you think there's any difference between 10,000 and 600?
No, not at all. I think that is a pure propaganda thing for the Democrats to show this is how we're cracking down on wealthy tax evasion that doesn't exist, right?
So it's sort of like the Republicans are tough on crime and the Democrats are tough on wealth.
Yeah, the wealthy, they're evil. They're really horrible people. It's like they're, you know, these devils running around.
Everybody's tough on something. Well, speaking of being tough on things, now Charles Adams continues here with this observation. He says, in times past, as the British jurist Blackstone observed, the executioner was brought in along with instruments of torture. Do we have that going on, an executioner and instruments of torture?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, just read the tax cuts.
Well, you know, on that note, I think we've had this discussion before, but you know, I keep thinking back to what, you know, whenever the Russian Revolution, November 17th, I think, which we're getting close to, and apparently the proletariat, if you will, shot the Tsars, right? That was it. Just invaded the palace, shot the Tsars, and you know, I've often thought the only reason that was necessary because Russia didn't have a tax code like the United States.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is, I mean, it's not just like the United States. I mean, if you look at most of the European countries, you look at Australia, you look at a lot of them, they have very complex. I mean, unless you're an employee, if you have any sort of business or self-employment, it starts getting very, very complex and they're very, very aggressive. And I think what you see about talking about you know, the instruments of torture and the fact that, you know, they use these synthetic felonies now. Look at what the punishment is for a tax crime, not just in the United States, but in Europe. It's sometimes longer than murder.
Well, Jimmy, it is possible to get a longer sentence for an FBAR violation than for killing somebody in the United States.
Insane.
Well, on that, let's focus on this sentence, okay? So, you know, I mean, I guess the problem was the proletariat didn't have the political power to have a tax code to destroy people, so they had to go shoot the SARS. But you know, in the modern world, I mean, this is just done through taxation. Think about things like the transition tax and GILTI, you know, stuff like that. But this sentence is interesting. Modern times, manufacture synthetic felonies. I mean, this reminds me of the synthetic. That's like FBAR, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, look, I mean, if you look at a lot of these advanced tax codes, they've gotten so complicated that nobody's in compliance, right? They're so complicated that the government has so many arguments that somebody's not complying that they can just make it up that it's criminal. Even if somebody legitimately tried to comply, did everything correct, the intent was to comply, the government could argue that there was a mistake and that there was something else because it's just so complicated.
You know, Jimmy, on that note, last week I was reading that the IRS has now taken the position that people can rely on their FAQs on the IRS website. I mean, that's new. This is amazing. I mean, and just imagine telling the public that you can rely on what the IRS actually says.
Yeah. Well, not what they tell you on the phone because, you know, the agents don't know what they're talking about, but you can rely on the website now.
Well,
did you know you're not even allowed to, I think you're not even allowed to rely on the instructions.
That has always been my understanding.
Yeah.
I mean, it's truly incredible. I mean, it's just sort of a system where I think far too much authority has been given to Treasury to implement regulations and that sort of stuff.
But
you know, I mean, nobody can understand what's expected of them. And, you know, I think that the first and most fundamental principle of a sane tax system is that regardless of the complexity, which is a problem, is that people ought to be able to understand what's expected. Do you think?
I think so. And I'm going to go even one further. If a court says something and the IRS were to lose, they should follow it. But they do non-acquiescence, which is essentially saying we're not going to do what the court says. That they're allowed to do this process of non-acquiescence where they continue to take a position that a court of law said is incorrect is unbelievable to me.
Well, but that's only because, I mean, personally, I think the Internal Revenue Code of the United States has replaced the Constitution and is now the Constitution.
I've never thought of that, but I would tend to agree with you.
I mean, it's amazing stuff. And so, I mean, just think of it, okay? So the Internal Revenue Code is the Constitution. It's sort of the religion. And then we have, you know, we think of the structure of, say, the Catholic Church or something. You know, we have bishops and cardinals. You know, these are the accountants and lawyers. And, you know, this is how you talk to the IRS, right? I mean, it's amazing stuff. And sooner or later, we're going to have a Martin Luther come along and say, oh, enough is enough, you know. We ought to be able to read the tax code directly.
Well, listen, I think this is kind of where we're at now. I think the government very well knows that the American, I'm not going to just pick on America. I'm going to say in most countries, I think the governments know.
Canada too.
Yeah, that the taxpayers have almost had enough. So what are they doing? They're trying to appease the masses by redistributing wealth from the wealthy. Because if you give the masses something for free, then they're not going to complain about taxation because they're not the ones being taxed for. It's the wealthy, right? So they're trying to bribe the masses to keep them at bay and to keep them happy. That is
absolutely correct. And a great example of it, you know, was going back to this proposed $600 bank reporting requirement. So notice what they, first it applies to everybody, then notice what they did was it wasn't so much they raised it to 10,000. I don't think that means anything. Okay. What they did was they exempted salaried employees from this, which I perceive is just a divide and conquer thing, right? Because, you know, oh, this doesn't affect me. It's not a problem.
Well, exactly. And I wish I would have saved it for this discussion, but I read a really interesting article. I think it was in the Wall Street Journal the other day that it was talking about, and this was interviewing Democrats. And it was asking them, like, if the government were willing to give you these additional services, would you pay $1,000 more in tax? And it was something like over 60% of them said no. So they only want additional services if somebody else is paying for it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, as we come to the end for today, I just want to focus on two other points in the introduction here. And I want to get sort of brief comments from you on each. But the first, you know, so after talking about in modern times, like to manufacture, I love that, synthetic felonies.
It's a great
this guy really understood this. Okay.
Yeah, he really did.
To terrorize taxpayers. Now he says, the first casualty of what we call dumb taxation has always been liberty. Second casualty, wealth and the strength of a nation. Notice he puts liberty as the first casualty. What do you think he means by that?
Are you really free? Do you really have, what rights do you have, right? I mean, your rights have been eroded more and more in favor of making sure that you're tax compliant.
Well, and of course, you know, for Americans abroad, they don't have the liberty to invest like normal people.
No.
You know, people can't move because people can't renounce citizenship because of exit taxes. I mean, it goes on and on, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to pursue happiness when you're being taxed to death.
that is true. You know, we're talking about this from the perspective of 2021. Maybe to end our discussion today.
I want to add one thing to the point of liberty being the first, the first thing to go. And that is, look at the passport revocations in the United States.
I mean, you got it. Oh my God. And on that one, here, let me just add this. I wrote something for this, I think for tax connections or whatever. Actually, all I did was I reproduced a post written by a brilliant post by Laura Snyder on this. But so what's so interesting is that accountants and lawyers talk about the language of taxation, but they don't talk about what this stuff really means, right? So we have a tax court decision that basically implements the passport revocation for tax debts rules in the United States, but it relied on a 10th Circuit decision, which effectively held that there was no constitutional right to leave the United States.
Exactly. Yep.
I mean, what an amazing, amazing imposition on liberty. I mean, like, this tax stuff is everywhere. And it's usually not about tax. Tax is just the language that is used, you know, to deprive liberty or whatever.
For sure.
But, you know, in bringing this, I think, to a close for today, or close to a close, this has been true for a long time. Charles Adams, quoting here, taxes played critical roles in the Middle Ages and into the modern world. With the British Civil War and the American and French Revolutions, the tax issue, now listen to this, the tax issue was so all important that even childhood school books centered on taxation. Think of it.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what they expect of people now, right? I mean, if you do anything to violate the tax code, you're expected to have known it.
That's right. That's right. And of course you can't, but I mean, you know, I'm sure you would agree with me. It's like, there is something fundamentally wrong with a country or a world where taxation is so visible and such a problem. I mean, shouldn't taxation, recognizing its necessity, just be something in the background that doesn't generate this kind of discussion and controversy?
Absolutely.
You realize that the reason there are so many lawyers in America is that every family has to have a permanent personal lawyer to deal with the tax code?
No, listen, I mean, there's, I mean, I can't tell you how many clients that I have that it's like, you know, they have a family doctor, they're like, you know, estate planning lawyer and a tax guy. It's like they travel with these people.
Yep, that's right. That's right. So we're almost at a close for today. So I want to encourage one people to follow our discussion, which we anticipate being once a week. And I think this is going to be great. I mean, this is so exciting. Okay, secondly, the book, okay, For Good and Evil, The Impact of Taxes on the Course of Civilization by Charles Adams. It's inexpensive. Please go out and get the book. Get it from Kindle or iBooks or something like this.
iBooks, yeah.
All right, just get it so you can follow along with us. And to bring this to an end today, here's a quote here in the book, just a page where he says, "Taxes are what we pay for civilized society," read the words of Oliver Wendell Holmes inscribed over the entrance to the Internal Revenue Service building in Washington, D.C. "But how we tax and spend determines to a great extent whether we are prosperous or poor, free or enslaved, and most important, good or evil." And Jimmy, I think that we should title this series Good and Evil. What do you think?
I'm with you, and I'm excited to continue it.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for today, and we will be picking this up again next Monday.